around him.
I don't know, man.
I know. I go in the store. Devante leans against a broom near the cash register, wearing one of those ugly green aprons Daddy tries to make me and Seven wear when we work in the store. There's a pang in my chest. Khalil wore one too. Devante's talking to Kenya as she holds a basket full of groceries. When the bell on the door clangs behind me, both of them look my way.
Yo, what happened?
Devante asks. Was that the cops outside? Says Kenya. From here, I see Mr. Lewis and Tim standing in the doorway of Daddy's office. He must be in there. Yeah, I answer Kenya, heading toward the back. Kenya and Devante follow me, asking about 50 million questions that I don't have time to answer. Papers are scattered all on the office floor. Daddy's hunched over his desk, his back moving up and down with each heavy breath. He pounds the desk.
Fuck!
Daddy once told me there's a rage passed down to every black man from his ancestors, born the moment they couldn't stop the slave masters from hurting their families. Daddy also said there's nothing more dangerous than when that rage is activated.
Let it out, son,
Mr. Lewis tells him.
Fuck them pigs, man, Tim says. They only did that shit 'cause they know about Star.
Wait, what? Daddy glances over his shoulder. His eyes are puffy and wet, like he's been crying.
The hell you talking about, Tim? One of the homeboys saw you, Lisa, and your baby girl getting out an ambulance at the crime scene that night, Tim says. Word spread around the neighborhood, and folks think she's the witness they've been talking about on the news.
Oh, shit.
Star, go ring Kenya up, Daddy says. Vontae, finish them floors.
I head for the cash register, passing Seven and Sakani. The neighborhood knows. I ring Kenya up, my stomach knotted the whole time. If the neighborhood knows, it won't be long until people outside of Garden Heights know. And then what? You rang that up twice, Kenya says. Huh? The milk. You rang it up twice, Star? Oh. I cancel one of the milks and put the carton into a bag. Kenya's probably cooking for herself in Lyric tonight. She does that sometimes. I ring up the rest of her stuff, take her money, and hand her the change. She stares at me a second, then says, were you really the one with him? My throat is thick. Does it matter?
Yeah, it matters. Why you keeping quiet about it? Like you hiding or something?
Don't say it that way.
But it is that way, right?
I sigh. Kenya, stop. You don't understand, all right? Kenya folds her arms.
What's to understand? A lot.
I don't mean to yell, but damn, I can't go around telling people that shit.
Why not? Because you ain't see what the cops just did to my dad, 'cause they know I'm the witness. So you gonna let the police stop you from speaking out for Khalil? I thought you cared about him way more than that.
I do. I care more than she may ever know. I already talked to the cops, Kenya. Nothing happened. What else am I supposed to do?
Go on TV or something, I don't know,
she says.
Tell everybody what really happened that night. They're not even giving his side of the story. You're letting them trash talk him.
Excuse, how the hell am I letting them do anything?
You hear all the stuff they're saying about him on the news, calling him a thug and stuff, and you know that ain't Khalil. I bet if he was one of your private school friends, you'd be all on TV defending him and shit.
Are you for real?
Hell yeah, she says. You dropped him for them bougie-ass kids, and you know it. You probably would have dropped me if I didn't come around because of my brother.
That's not true.
You sure?
I'm not. Kenya shakes her head.
Fucked up part about this? The Khalil I know would have jumped on TV in a hot second and told everybody what happened that night if it meant defending you. And you can't do the same for him.
It's a verbal slap. The worst kind, too, because it's the truth. Kenya gets her bags.
I'm just saying, Star, if I could change what happens at my house with my mama and daddy, I would. Here you are, with a chance to help change what happens in our whole neighborhood, and you staying quiet, like a coward.
Kenya leaves. Tim and Mr. Lewis aren't far behind her. Tim gives me the black power fist on his way out. I don't deserve it, though. I head to Daddy's office. Seven standing in the doorway, and Daddy sitting on his desk. Sikani's next to him, nodding along to whatever Daddy's saying, but looking sad. Reminds me of the time Daddy and Mama had the talk with me. Guess Daddy decided not to wait until Sikani's 12. Daddy sees me.
Sev, go cover the cash register. Take Sikani with you. About time he learned.
Aw, man, Sikani groans. Don't blame him. The more you learn to do at the store, the more you're expected to do at the store.
Daddy pats the now empty spot beside him on the desk. I hop up on it. His office has just enough space for the desk and a file cabinet. Framed photographs crowd the walls, like the one of him and Mama at the courthouse the day they got married. Her belly, aka me, big and round. Pictures of me and my brothers as babies. And this one picture from about 7 years ago when my parents took the three of us to the mall for one of those JCPenney family portraits. They dressed alike in baseball jerseys, baggy jeans, and Timberlands. Tacky.
You aight? Daddy asks.
Are you?
I will be, he says. Just hate that you and your brothers had to see that shit.
They only did it 'cause of me.
Nah, baby. They started that before they knew about you.
But that didn't help. I stare at my J's as I kick my feet back and forth. Kenya called me a coward for not speaking out.
She didn't mean it. She going through a lot, that's all. King throwing Aisha around like a rag doll every single night.
But she's right. My voice cracks. I'm this close to crying. I am a coward. After seeing what they did to you, I don't want to say shit now.
Hey.
Daddy takes my chin, so I have no choice but to look at him.
Don't fall for that trap. That's what they want. If you don't want to speak out, that's up to you. But don't let it be because you're scared of them. Who do I tell you that you have to fear?
Nobody but God and you and Mama. Especially Mama when she's extremely pissed. He chuckles.
Yeah, the list ends there. You ain't got nothing or nobody else to fear. You see this?
He rolls up his shirt sleeve, revealing the tattoo of my baby picture on his upper arm.
What it say at the bottom?
Something to live for, something to die for, I say, without really looking. I've seen it my whole life.
Exactly. You and your brothers are something to live for and something to die for. And I'll do whatever I gotta do to protect you.
He kisses my forehead.
If you're ready to talk, baby, talk. I got your back.
12. I'm luring Bricks inside when it passes out front. I watch it crawl down the street for the longest time till I get the sense to alert somebody.
Daddy!
He looks up from pulling weeds around his bell peppers.
Are they for real with that?
The tank resembles the ones they show on the news when talking about war in the Middle East. It's the size of two Hummers, The blue and white lights on the front make the street almost as bright as it is in daytime. An officer is positioned on top, wearing a vest and a helmet. He points his rifle ahead. A voice booms from the armored vehicle.
All persons found violating the curfew will be subject to arrest.
Daddy pulls more weeds.
Some bullshit.
Bricks follows the piece of bologna I dangle in front of him all the way to his spot in the kitchen. He sits there all content, chomping on it and the rest of his food. Bricks won't act crazy as long as Daddy's home. All of us are kind of like Bricks, really. Daddy being home means Mama won't sit up all night, Sekani won't flinch all the time, and Seven won't have to be the man of the house. I'll sleep better, too. Daddy comes in, dusting caked dirt off his hands.
Them roses dying. Bricks, you been pissing on my roses.
Bricks's head perks up. He locks his eyes with Daddy's, but eventually lowers his head.
I bet not catch you doing it, Daddy says, or we gonna have a problem.
Bricks lowers his eyes, too. I grab a paper towel and a slice of pizza from the box on the counter. This is like my fourth slice tonight. Mama bought two huge pies from Sal's on the other side of the freeway. Italians own it, so the pizza is thin, herby. Is that a word? And good.
You finished your homework?
Daddy asks. Yep. A lie. He washes his hands at the kitchen sink.
Got any tests this week?
Trig on Friday.
You studied for it?
Yep. Another lie.
Good.
He gets the grapes out the refrigerator.
You still got that old laptop? The one you had before we bought you that expensive-ass fruit one?
I laugh. It's an Apple MacBook, Daddy.
It damn sure wasn't the price of an Apple. Anyway, you got the old one?
Yeah.
Good. Give it to Seven. Tell him to look over it and make sure it's aight. I want Devontae to have it.
Why?
You pay bills?
No.
Then I ain't gotta answer that.
That's how he gets out of almost every argument with me. I should buy one of those cheap magazine subscriptions and say, yeah, I pay a bill, and what? It won't matter, though. I head to my room after I finish my pizza. Daddy's already gone to his and Mama's room. Their TV's on, and they're both lying on their stomachs on the bed. One of her legs on his as she types on her laptop. It's oddly adorable. Sometimes I watch them to get an idea of what I want one day.
You still mad at me about Devontae?
Daddy asks her. She doesn't answer, keeping her eyes on her laptop. He scrunches up his nose and gets all in her face.
You still mad at me? Huh? You still mad at me?
She laughs and playfully pushes at him. Move, boy. No, I'm not mad at you. Now give me a grape. He grins and feeds her a grape. And I just can't. The cuteness is too much. Yeah, they're my parents. But they're my OTP. Seriously. Daddy watches whatever she's doing on the computer, feeding her a grape every time he eats one. She's probably uploading the latest family snapshots on Facebook for our out-of-town relatives. With everything that's going on, what can she say? Sekani saw cops harass his daddy, but he's doing so well in school. Hashtag proud mom. Or, Star saw her best friend die. Keep her in your prayers. But my baby made the honor roll again. Hashtag blessed. Or even, tanks are rolling by outside, but Seven's been accepted into 6 colleges so far. Hashtag he is going places. I go to my room. Both my old and new laptops are on my desk, which is a mess. There's a huge pair of Daddy's Jordans next to my old laptop. The yellowed bottoms of the sneakers face the lamp, and a layer of Saran wrap protects my concoction of detergent and toothpaste that'll eventually clean them. Watching yellowed soles turn icy again is as satisfying as squeezing a blackhead and getting all the gunk out. amazing. According to the lie I told Daddy, my homework is supposed to be done. But I've been on a Tumblr break, aka I haven't started my homework and have spent the last 2 hours on Tumblr. I started a new blog, The Khalil I Know. It doesn't have my name on it, just pictures of Khalil. In the first one, he's 13 with an afro. Uncle Carlos took us to a ranch so we could get a taste of country life. And Khalil's looking side-eyed at a horse that's beside him. I remember him saying, "If that thing makes a wrong move, I'm running." On Tumblr, I captioned the picture, "The Khalil I know was afraid of animals." I tagged it with his name. One person liked it and reblogged it. Then another and another. That made me post more pictures, like one of us in a bathtub when we were 4. You can't see our private parts because of all the suds, and I'm looking away from the camera. Miss Rosalie's sitting on the side of the tub beaming at us, and Khalil's beaming right back at her. I wrote, "The Khalil I know loved bubble baths almost as much as he loved his grandma." In just 2 hours, hundreds of people have liked and reblogged the pictures. I know it's not the same as getting on the news, like Kenya said, but I hope it helps. It's helping me, at least. Other people posted about Khalil, uploaded artwork of him, posted pictures of him that they show on the news. I think I've reblogged every single one. Funny, though, somebody posted a video clip of Tupac from back in the day. Okay, so every video clip of Tupac is from back in the day. He's got a little kid on his lap and is wearing a backward snapback that would be fly now. He explains thug life like Khalil said he did. The hate you give little infants fucks everybody. Pac spells out fucks because that kid is looking dead in his face. When Khalil told me what it meant, I kinda understood it. I really understand it now. I grab my old laptop when my phone buzzes on my desk. Mama returned it earlier, hallelujah, thank you, Black Jesus. She said it's only in case there's another situation at school. I got it back, though. Don't really care why. I'm hoping it's a text from Kenya. I sent her the link to my new Tumblr earlier. Thought she'd like to see it since she kinda pushed me to do it. But it's Chris. He took note from 7 with his all caps texts. OMG, this Fresh Prince episode. Will's dad didn't take him with him. The asshole came back and left him again. Now he's having a breakdown with Uncle Phil. My eyes are sweating. Understandable. That's seriously the saddest episode ever. I text Chris back. Sorry, sad face. And your eyes aren't sweating. You're crying, babe. He replies, lies. I say, you ain't gotta lie, Craig. You ain't gotta lie. He responds, did you really use a line from Friday on me? So watching 90s movies is kinda our thing, too. I text back, yep. Wink, smiley face. He replies, bye, Felicia. I take the laptop to 7's room, phone in hand, in case Chris has another Fresh Prince breakdown. Some reggae chants meet me in the hall, followed by Kendrick Lamar rapping about being a hypocrite. 7 sits on the side of the lower bunk, an open computer tower at his feet. With his head down, his dreads hang loosely and make a curtain in front of his face. Devante sits cross-legged on the floor, his afro bobs to the song. A zombie version of Steve Jobs watches them from a poster on the wall, along with all these superheroes and Star Wars characters. There's a Slytherin comforter on the bottom bunk that I swear I'll steal one day. 7 and I are reverse HP fans. We liked the movies first, then the books. I got Khalil and Natasha hooked on them too. Mama found the first movie for $1 at a thrift store back when we lived in the Cedar Grove Projects. 7 and I said we were Slytherins, since almost all Slytherins were rich. When you're a kid in a one-bedroom in the projects,